Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview coming to you live from the Valley. My name is Louis Mendes and joining me here in the studio at the Valley, the home of Charlton Athletic, is Mr. Tom Wallin. How are you doing, Tom?
Good, yeah.
Yeah, good. Had a good week?
It's been alright.
How's your hangover?
It's gone.
Gone?
Totally
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, excellent
fine.
Stuff. Excellent stuff. And joining us here, Nathan, how's your hangover? Nathan Miller.
Mine was alright. I didn't get too savage as much as Tom did, but but no, it was good. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
was
good evening. Yeah, on Monday evening, we went to the Football Supporters Federation's Awards, where sadly we didn't take home the Club Podcast of the Year award, but we still got to go there, which was great fun. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes later on. On tonight's show, we've got one hell of a treat for you coming up. We're going to hear from 1998... playoff final goalkeeper hero Sasa Ilić. He joined us on the phone during the week and I spoke to him for a good 15 minutes or so, an exclusive interview with yet another Charlton legend after we've had Mark Kinsella and John Robinson in the last few weeks. We're going to play that later on. We're also going to hear from Lee Bowyer. He's up for Manager of the Month. He talks about the chances of him picking up that accolade. We'll also talk about the resurgence of Mark Marshall in the last few weeks, and then of course we'll turn our attention to Saturday's trip up to Bloomfield Road. We're taking on Blackpool. And we're going to hear from Matt Scrafton from the Blackpool Gazette, lets us know how the Tangerines have been getting on, and of course we'll hear from Bayer again as he gives us all the latest team news as we gear up for another big game as the Addicts look to extend their league winning run to 5 games. But we'll come on to that in a minute. So Monday evening we're at the Football Supporters Federation award. As I said, we didn't take the win, unfortunately, but it was a great evening, hopefully next year instead, Tom.
Yeah, and it's just obviously a privilege to be nominated. It was good to be there, a great experience. I don't know too much about the other podcasts in terms of what they do that we don't. But
don't
no,
talk about Charlton, which yeah, helps, I guess.
That's possibly, yeah. But no, it was a really good experience, and I think it's recognition for the work that, like I said in my tweet, that you do, because you put a lot of work into this. Mm. We just turn up and just chat. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, and it's you
we'll
know,
expect that bit.
Yeah, well, no, this was pre. Before we went on, Tom said, "Right, Lou was like, just Tom, say this.
Shall I get the flowers out now? Or?
Have you got that apple,
yeah.
Tom?"
So yeah, no, it was a really good experience, and maybe next year we'll win it.
No, the whole reason I wanted to talk is because I wanted to hear if anyone could do a Jim White impression as good as Max Rushton. So Max Rushton, the host of the Guardian Football Podcast, they won a different award to the one that we were nominated for. We spoke to him at the end of the evening, and his impression of Jim White saying Roland du Châtelet was the best thing I've ever heard. Yeah. Nathan, have a go.
Roland du Châtelet.
Not even close. Not Tom,
I ain't even going to try.
Leave it. You've got to have a go.
No, I'll leave it at yours.
Roland du Châtelet. I can't do it either.
It's like boxing and that.
I'll work on it this week.
Let's get ready to run.
So we weren't victorious, but thanks for all of your support and your kind messages throughout the last couple of weeks since we've been nominated. Fingers crossed we'll be back there next year. At the Football Supporters Federation, congratulations to the Hornets Nest, the Watford podcast, who did win in our category. Yeah, well done. I have to believe that.
Salty.
No, well done to them. Right, on tonight's show, I did say we're going to talk about Lee Bowyer has been nominated, of course, for the Manager of the Month award. He was speaking to Tony Hudson in his press day earlier on today, and he was asked what it would mean to him if he was to take home that accolade.
It'd be an honour to win it, because I'm new into this side of things, and to win something, it's always good, and it just shows that how well we're doing, you know, and like what we were saying earlier with the injuries and stuff, and just shows how well the lads are performing. To I said to him before the start of last month, like this month, can we get back into the playoffs? And they've done that, you know, they won, what, four out of four. So it's rewarding because it's we're performing and we're competing and we're in a good position there in the league. So I'd be over the moon, yeah.
We touched on it last week, 4 out of 4. Does a manager think, oh, I could get manager of the month?
No, I don't think that. There's only one thing I want to win, and that's promotion. Manager of the month, yes, that's a bonus, but it's, I want to get promotion. And if I keep winning games and we keep winning games, then I've got more chance of winning things on the side, i.e. manager of the month. But if I could swap 3 manager of the months for promotion, I'd definitely do that.
You know there's a jinx attached to it, don't you? Managers win it and then the next game they lose. Has that crossed your mind?
Nah, I don't believe in all that. It's because what you win a trophy, then that makes your players perform badly the next day. I don't believe in that, no. If I was lucky enough to win it, then that'll have no effect on what my players do on Saturday.
So there we go. Lee Bayer is nominated for the Manager of the Month award. Jason Pearce is also actually up for Player of the Month. I mean, it has been a really good month. I mean, 100% league record, only conceded twice in the league during those games. I mean, it goes to show that these award nominations coming in, they must be doing something right.
Yeah, and I think they both thoroughly deserve them. Obviously, the results speak for themselves, the games that we've won. And as Boya says, you know, I think a lot of the credit does deserve to go down to him. Everything that's going on at the club, the injuries we've had and all of that, I think he's doing really well and thoroughly deserves it. I'm sure that's, you know, not why he's in the game, but we've managed to get ourselves back into the playoffs. Won 4 out of 4 in the league through November. So, yeah, best of luck to him.
Nath, obviously, I mean, Bose was asked about the Manager of the Month curse as such. Do you believe in that? Boya doesn't seem to.
He always, you know, he always pokes his head out and it sort of happens. But, I'm sort of with Bose in a way. I don't think it affects anyone. I just think if you lose the next game, it's like, oh, the dreaded curse. But if you win, nothing gets said about it. So I just think it's just one of those things. But, proof being put in on Saturday if we lose, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Do you think Boya will take the award?
I can't see why he wouldn't. He's been the best manager for me. And like I say, you win 4 in a row and get yourselves back into the playoffs. I know Portsmouth have been good, obviously, at the top of the league, but he deserves it as much as anyone, in my opinion.
Excellent stuff. Now, Bose was also asked about the resurgence of Mark Marshall over the last few weeks and whether his performance against Doncaster last week, what he made of that, and whether that's given him the chance to be involved up at Bloomfield Road this Saturday.
Yeah, I think I have to say that's the best game that he's played since he's been here. In the attacking side, his balls into the box, his final delivery was a lot better. He needs a goal the other week by getting across a defender in another game, something else that he hasn't done before. So he's taken on board everything that trying to tell him, and that's only going to make him improve and then give him more chance of playing. Now I'm seeing that end product, then he's got a case to have a chance of starting. So there's loads of games coming up, and I've no doubt that he'll be involved for sure.
Will he be in contention on Saturday?
He'll travel with us Saturday, yeah. He'll be in the squad.
So there we go. Boya saying that he'll certainly be travelling Mark Marshall up to Bloomfield Road, be involved in the squad. Sounds like he'll be on the bench from that, but I guess the proof of the pudding will be in the eating by the time we get up to Lancashire. I think that's where Blackpool is on the weekend. I mean, his turnaround over the last few weeks has been remarkable, really, when you consider how disappointed he had been in the earlier part of this season.
Yeah, I think quite... I feel a bit sorry for Mark. He reminds me of a bit like Lloyd Sam, where I think sometimes his delivery is not the best. I think he came with a big reputation as well when he come from Bradford, and they lost out to Millwall, and then it just hasn't worked out for him. For me, I think it's mainly due to the formation that Bose plays. I don't think he fits into quite a narrow system. But, you know, we've utilised him as a wing back or just as a full back sometimes. And obviously getting games now is obviously giving him a bit of confidence, and he's working on the bits what Bowes and Jacko have told him. So, yeah, it's nice to see him doing it now. So he just needs a little run of games, which I'm sure we will get over the festive period. But, you know, he scored the other day, which I was happy for. But we just need to get him more games and hopefully can push on.
I mean, Bowie mentioned it himself about his final ball, because that was one of the most frustrating things about Marshall, because I'd say even when he's been struggling, more often than not, he still seems to be able to get past the player with the ball, but his crossing at times has been so frustrating, because we know the reputation he came to the club with, and we know that we haven't really seen enough of it over the last 18 months.
Yeah, and I think it's that reputation that makes it that frustrating, because we thought he was going to be this guy that gets to the byline, that puts good crosses in, and we didn't just think it, we'd seen it as well, because that's what he had been doing. And then he gets here and he just didn't really deliver that. And as Nath says, over the last few games, you've seen a real surge in his performances. I think he's really improved. He did get that goal as well, which is obviously going to boost his confidence. And I think the way Boya's working players and making them play their way back into the team is clearly good for him. And he could have gone one or two ways, couldn't he? And he could have just sacked it in and said, right, I'm going to sulk. Or he could have put the effort in and got himself back into the team. And that's what he's done. Injuries have obviously helped him, but he's got to take that chance now. And yes, we've seen it in a few games, but we need to see it consistently in the league games, which are obviously the most important.
I think in terms of attitude, I don't think there's a player in the squad that will come close to Mark's attitude. He puts the hours. I remember we spoke to Christian Billick a couple of weeks ago after he'd been hauled off at half-time at Rochdale, and obviously he reacted to that, came back and was even better. And Christian said, you know, he spoke a lot to Marsh at the time, who himself was trying to play his way back into the team, work his way back into the team. And Marshall puts in the extra hours in training. He does everything. He does everything right. He appears to be the model professional who has reacted to a bad spell in the right way.
Yeah, I think in terms of being a footballer, obviously you've got to have undoubted technical qualities, but a lot of the time it's how you bounce back from things. And especially when you're left out, or you know, you've got a long-term injury, it's your mental strength that'll bring you through obviously the sort of not so good times, and it proves yourself as a character. And I think that's what Bowes has probably seen, that, you know, Tom said, he's not sulking, he's getting on with it, he's trying to improve his game, trying to improve the attributes that will make him force himself into Bowes' plan. So yeah, I think he just needs to keep going, and like you said about Billick, it's not just about technical ability, it's about mental strength as well.
And I mean, obviously with the FA Cup game last week, we got that chance to see Marshall playing well, and so unlucky with the own goal, if it is an own goal, that went in off him. But you said that's exactly why he was making these changes, so you could see other members of this squad. Robert Gammon sent in a funny tweet earlier that I thought I'd read out as well. He said, if we go up this year, we get in the third round next year for free. So Bowie was just playing the long game.
True that.
So effectively, we are trying to get into the third round, but just next season. So, I mean, clearly, that game has had its positives in terms of the likes of Marshall. And he talked about Dick Steele as well. And, you know, and it's up to Marshall to take his chances. Now we are out of the Chequer trade and the FA Cup and the League Cup. This is the only chance he's going to get now, is when it really matters.
Yeah, and it's not just him, it's all the players now. That's, you know, we've very clearly, I think, had one focus from the first game of the season, but obviously those other competitions have been, however you want to call them, fitness opportunities and inconvenience, whatever they are, but they have been opportunities for players like that to play, and they're not going to get that opportunity now unless, one, there's injuries, and two, they put a shift in and show that they're worth their place. So yeah, I think that's healthy competition. We've only got a small squad as it is, so I'm sure they're going to get some minutes, whatever happens. It's just about when they do get into that side now, can they take the chance and keep their place.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's hope so, that if Mark Marshall does get off the bench on Saturday up at Bloomfield Road, he does grasp that opportunity with both hands. Now, don't forget, coming up just after the break, we're going to hear from a Charlton legend, Sasa Ilić, the hero of the 1998 playoff final with his penalty save against Michael Gray that sent Charlton to the Premier League after the greatest playoff final of all time. He's coming up next here on Charlton Live after this quick break.
Lyle Taylor has a glorious chance on his Addicts debut. Give Charlton a lead, and referee blows whistle. Taylor steps up. Lyle Taylor
Yes! Jordan! Charlton take the lead after 9 minutes. Lyle Taylor on his Charlton debut gives the away side an unlikely lead.
Welcome back. This is Charlton Live, the big match preview coming to you live on Maritime Radio, or of course via your podcast app. Acast is the best podcast app that we use. Make sure you subscribe to us in Acast so you can listen to all our shows twice weekly the second they come out. Now, we've got another treat for you on this evening's Charlton Live. Over the last few weeks, we've already heard from Mark Kinsella and John Robinson, who are both returning to the Valley this Sunday for the playoff 20th anniversary dinner, and another man who is doing exactly that is Sasa Ilić. He of course saved the penalty that sent Charlton to the Premier League after that remarkable 4-4 draw with Sunderland at Wembley. He'd only just joined the club a few months before. It's an amazing journey he had, and now Sasa's going to share his memories of that day, of that journey he had with the club that day, of course. How it tells us how he still dines out on that moment. But don't forget, you know, he'd only signed for us a few months before. It was from zero to hero in just a few months. Sasa tells us, starts off by telling us how his journey here at the Valley started.
To cut a long story short, it was a case of making a phone call through one of the directors at the club, who more or less asked Alan Kirby if I could come on trials. I came knocking on Charlton's door down at the training ground at in Eltham, and obviously explained who I was. I had an agreed trial there, and I didn't know who Alan Kirby was at that particular time, or didn't know anybody at the club. So they just looked at me from head to toe, said, "Okay, come in the changing rooms over there," and that's how it all began.
And that first few months, obviously, you got your place in the team, and Charlton were really surging up the table towards the end of that season. We had this amazing run.
Yeah. Where
I think you went 8 games without conceding a goal. So, I mean, that was quite a run to have in your first spell at the club.
It was one of those situations where things just sort of fell into place. It was just like missing jigsaw pieces in the jigsaw puzzle that sort of all came together. Pretty much, from the time when, just after Christmas, more or less. So I broke into the team. I think my first game was against Stoke away. I think it was the 28th of January. But it was a case of also, the players getting on really well. You know, there wasn't much stress on us at that particular time. There was no indication that we would even go up, so there was at one point when we started playing really well, we weren't contenders at that particular time, especially early in the new year in 98. So it's only towards the end, after a few great results and obviously keeping loads of clean sheets, that we got ourselves in a position to obviously compete for the, to get promoted to the Premiership.
And we had those two games against it, which kept two further clean sheets. So when you come into that day at Wembley, I mean, obviously we're playing a massive club in Sunderland, and Charlton at the time were certainly considered a much smaller club. But with the run that we were on, I mean, there must have been a certain confidence going into that game, especially once we got our noses in front, considering the record we had.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't, obviously the two results against Ipswich helped a great deal. Coming into the finals against Sunderland at Wembley, that's like a whole different kettle of fish. Now it's something that you got, you have to be wary of, and having the fantastic run into the Wembley playoff finals, not conceding any goals, playing really well, scoring, keeping clean sheets, it was a huge confidence booster. So coming into the finals at Wembley, it's just a different, atmosphere, different sort of stage. It's like all of a sudden that, out of nowhere, we've just pretty much placed ourselves, in the window of scrutiny and for everybody to see us play, and, for us to to prove what we've done up until that point. And but even having said that, we were still the underdogs for that match, you know. So we never really expected us to go through. Maybe that sort of helped in a way for us to get the result at the end.
Yeah. I mean, can you remember what your feelings were as you were first going out onto the pitch? Because I can remember there's that famous clip of you walking out and you have to cover your ears just because of the noise when you first walk onto that Wembley pitch.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, that was an extraordinary entrance. You know, 88,000, 90,000 people partying with these fireworks, you know, just blowing up literally by the side of you as you're coming out. It was it's one of those moments that you think, oh my God, what the hell is happening? Where am I? You know, where am I? But yeah, it was just. But we were focused on the game. You know, even with the crowds and the whole pyrotechnics, you know, pretty much blowing up in front of us, we were still quite focused on the game.
Mm. And of course, we went into half time 1-0 up with Clive Mendonca's goal. And as I said, with that goal record, there must have been a feeling that if we could keep it tight in that first 15, 20 minutes of that second half, there'd be a very good chance that we'd go on to win this by a goal to nil.
You know, keeping all those clean sheets, we just didn't feel natural for us to concede a goal. So, again, you know, us not being the favourites to win that game. Coming back after half time, being 1-0 up, you just think, you know, we were thinking that, you know, we'll remain like this, or at least we won't concede a goal. But little did we know that, you know, there'll be extra 7 goals conceded on, you know, all 3-4 goals conceded on one end and on the other, too. So turned out to be quite an interesting match to follow and watch.
I was going to say, I must say, like, obviously, when we're watching it, we know that we're viewing an incredible game, but when you're in the middle of it, it must be quite hard to sort of keep your concentration when it's turned into such a to-in and fro-in contest.
Oh, God, it was... it's just a mix of emotions, you know. Obviously, conceding the first goal, it was like, oh, my God, we just conceded a goal. Then, you know, before you know it, we're 2-1 down and then we're chasing the results and, you know, then extra time or just before extra time, you know, Richard Rufus scores that goal to keep us in the game, and it's just crazy, you know. It's just one of those rollercoaster scenarios of emotions going up and down constantly. But again, you know, it's not until the game was finished and when you look back on that game that you realise how crazy it was.
Now, of course, yeah, we all know what happened. It ended up with the penalty shootout. I mean, when you're facing so many spot kicks, I guess we know that goalkeepers tend to study the form, perhaps, of other takers. But when it keeps going so long and so long, I guess it sort of becomes a case of the unknown. You're not perhaps expecting what the penalty taker is going to do. So it sort of becomes a lottery, perhaps.
Well, if you don't get a save in the first, you know, 2-3 penalty kicks, and you think, oh my God, what am I supposed to do now? Do I stay in my line? Do I dive to my left, or do I dive to the right, or do I stand big? It just becomes, and you know, like there's no chance of saving a penalty shot at all. And you're right, as the penalties were taken more and more, it just became like, oh my God, where now? You feel a bit lost, you know, but you see your teammates and everyone in the halfway line, like, you know, clenching their fists and say, come on, you can do it. I'm like, oh my God, what am I supposed to do now?
And you had that one that you got your hands onto as well. I think maybe the third or fourth one that it looked like you'd kept out and it just crept in as well. So were you thinking that point?
Yeah.
Oh, no, the chance is gone.
Yeah, I don't know who took that penalty.
I'm thinking it might have been Makin, perhaps. Chris Makin, was
possibly
it?
Yes, yeah. He was. Yeah, Chris Makin, yeah. Mm. So he took that penalty shot and I saw it, obviously, I guess the right way. Maybe because I took that extra sort of, I don't know, maybe I anticipated a bit too early. And as I was diving to my right, he kicked the ball in that direction. But I actually thought I had it, you know. Mm. And I remember just hitting the bottom palm of my hand and it just literally ricocheted into the back of the net. And I'm like, oh my God, what have I done now? it was a roller coaster for us also in the goals.
And when Michael Gray was stepping up, I mean, looking back at it now, you can say he probably looks a little bit nervous. I mean, were you, as a goalkeeper, were you trying to sort of stare down the players as they were coming towards us? Obviously, you were making yourself big within the goal as well. But
during that, so many penalties have been taken so far, so you're just trying to use every trick in the book just to try and unsettle the person that's taking the penalty kick. So obviously I try my very best to, intimidate my opponent. Obviously not realizing, the state of mind Michael Gray was in at the time, but, I tried to use every trick in the book, stone in the eyes, you know, you're not going to score past me and so on, get in my line just before the penalty kick was taken, just trying to unsettle as much as I can. And obviously when Michael took that penalty, and my body movement was going that direction anyway, but as soon as he struck the ball, I already had a grin on my face before I even caught the ball. So as soon as he struck it, I was my body positioning was in the going the direction of the ball, and I thought, that's it, I've got this. The only way I can explain it is it's like a slow motion scenario. As I'm diving to my left, I see the ball literally, coming my direction, and I had this huge big grin on my face before I even caught the ball. And obviously the rest is history.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that scene afterwards is so famous to Charlton fans, when you come rushing out of the goal and then you end up on the floor under a pile of bodies, and then even the substitutes and the coaching staff in their suits as well joining in. I mean, can you remember so much from that moment?
Oh, it was euphoric, it was one of those situations, because it dragged on and, the emotions going from one end to the other, and it was anybody's game. It was just like a tennis match, towards the end, whoever wins the next point ends up winning the game. So it was anybody's game. Obviously, when I caught the ball, when I saved the penalty, I just, through sheer excitement and the adrenaline just kicked in. I think I could have ran a marathon after saving that penalty kick. So, as I was running towards the centre of the goals, I saw my teammates running towards me. So I thought, okay, the best line of defence is if I just literally throw myself to the floor and hopefully they'll have some mercy on me and not squash me as much as they did. But it was great. I think I could have had the whole Wembley jump on me at that time, and I think I would have survived. That's how much the adrenaline was pumping at the time.
And how long did it take to sink in what it actually meant? Because obviously you've got the victory, the relief and the adrenaline, but then... now you've got this chance to play on the biggest stage in English football. How long did it take to sink in?
It took a while because, coming from where I came from literally, I don't know, 6 months, coming to Charlton and knocking on the door asking for a trial and end up playing at, the player finals at Wembley and saving the crucial penalty. It was a bit of a sort of, meteoric rise to the stadium where I got to. So it was only until the following day when, obviously, after the following day you go and buy the press to see the reports on the game and so on, to see what score you got from 1 out of 10, 1 out of 10, and all of a sudden I'm buying this newspaper and I got my face on the back, back page of every sort of tabloid in the UK, and I'm like, oh my god, look at this meeting. It still didn't really kick in at all. It was only after maybe a few days when things settled down, and you managed to just to relax, and you play back some of the game that you played and so on, just to look at the goals that I conceded and so on. It took a while for me to grasp the concept that we're actually in the Premiership. It's very hard for anybody to comprehend, in these sort of situations, how much you've achieved at that particular time whilst on the pitch. It does take some time afterwards to understand what the consequences are or were, me by saving that penalty.
And of course, now that, our playoff final goes down as the greatest playoff final that Wembley ever saw. And whenever the playoffs come around at the end of every season, it's always mentioned. So do you still get a little bit of pride your penalty save going up on the TV again?
Oh, no, I'm still living off that penalty save. So it's great for me, definitely. But yeah, it was one of those games that, that's what English football is all about. I think these type of games is what English football is renowned for, and that particular game just typifies the English game. You know, the heart, you know, the you know, never give up to the last minute, and it's always exhilarating to watch when you don't know what the outcome's going to be.
And of course, you're coming back for the dinner next weekend. You're looking forward to getting back in contact with your former teammates, and of course with the Charlton fans.
That would be fantastic. I just can't believe it's been 20 years since the Wembley playoff finals. So it'd be great to come back and catch up with my old teammates. See how much we've aged and how many grey hairs we've got in the meantime. So it'll be fantastic to catch up again. And obviously, you know, to sit there with the fans that experienced the final at Wembley too. So it'll be nice to see their feedback too.
Sasa Ilić there, the 1998 playoff final hero there. He saved the penalty from Michael Gray that sent Charlton into the Premier League for the first time, well, ever since it was called the Premier League, actually. The first time Premier League football or top flight football had been at the Valley for a long, long time, of course, because we've been away while we're back in the old First Division as well. Great to hear from him. Pete Howarth tweets in, still get goosebumps when people talk about that game. It will never be beaten. Was lucky enough to stay at Sasa's hotel, share a beer and talk to him about it on my honeymoon. He said it was incredible. Them days will be back soon, hopefully. In May. I mean, yeah, we've been lucky with the legends we've had on the show over the last few weeks, and Sasa's right up there, and it's just great to hear, like, his memories. He admits he still dines out on it, which you would do, I guess, if you made a save like that. And it's remarkable to remember, like, the turnaround from, like, as I said at the top, he was an absolute zero before he joined, you know, and he came in, he had this amazing run towards the end of that season where he went 8 games without conceding a goal. Everyone was expecting it to be a tight game, and obviously it didn't turn out to be that way at Wembley. But I mean, what a way to sort of introduce yourself to English football in the first 6 months of your time at Charlton.
Yeah, I think he obviously said that he came into Charlton not really knowing, you know, Kerbs and the players. And then we went on a sort of an insane run, clean sheets, and we did sort of sneaking under the radar that season. And we went into the final with Sunderland being obviously strong favourites, because, you know, they had the two of obviously Phillips and Quinn. But and then obviously the rest was, you know, it sounds a bit cheesy, but it was history. And like you say, it's a bit of a, it just seemed to come out of nowhere. Because I think I was only 11, so I only remember some bits of the season vividly. But there, like he said, there was never like an expectation of us to going up or anything like that, like massively. But yeah, so when you listen to Sasa there, it's just insane how it all sort of happened, and it was sort of a fairy tale how it all ended, especially him saving the penalty and obviously Michael Gray losing his bottle.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear actually how he was trying to sort of stare into the eyes of the opposition penalty takers. I guess when a game's just gone on that long, you're just desperately trying to find any edge, anything that can give you an advantage over your opposition.
Yeah, exactly. And we saw Pickford with his water bottle over the World Cup with stuff written down on there. Yeah, as you say, you try anything. And I imagine, like, the technology, I don't know how much they'd have studied penalties. I mean, I know it was around, but the technology's so much more advanced now, and, you know, the access that they get to players is so much more easy to come by now. So you'd think then, you know, especially when you get to penalty taker 4, 5 and 6, they might never have taken a penalty before, or 1 or 2. So you're not going to have that knowledge of where they're going. So as you say, you just try and put anything into place to try and unsettle the other player. And I think Robinson said it, didn't he, on Sunday show, that actually when you look at it, Michael Gray's legs are just gone when he tried to take that penalty, because it was such a poor effort. But I mean, that doesn't take anything away from Ilić. And like Nath just said, the performances he put in alongside that back four to keep all those clean sheets at the end of the season, to come out to Charlton and to do all that. And yes, he conceded a few on the day, but he's the one at the end of the day who had his name in lights, and as he said, his face all over the tabloids the next morning.
So Sasa will be back here at the Valley on Sunday, this Sunday, the 9th of December, for the Back to the Valley anniversary dinner at the Charlton Athletic Community Trust are putting on. I've tweeted out the link for tickets. I'm not entirely sure if you can still get them, but if you'd like to go, just have a click on the link, see if you might be able to blag one or two before they go off sale. Myself and Nathan are going to the dinner on Sunday, and then because of that, Sunday evening show will be brought forward by a couple of hours. It's going to be sometime four or five-ish. We're going to confirm that exactly on Sunday as we work out what time it will be. So just bear in mind, if you want to listen to the show live on Sunday, it will be a couple of hours earlier. Check out our social media feeds to see confirmation of exactly when it is, but the podcast will still be available as per normal. Right, let's have a quick break, and then we're going to start to gear up for Saturday's trip up to Bloomfield Road.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Nudge from Solly, so Solly wins the ball and then stabs it forward. Grant's going to put Turner under pressure. Turner, an experienced defender,
no
goes
way.
Down, but no way, a foul, and Grant's got away and burst into the penalty area. Switch it across and oh, it's there. And Tron has scored in front of the away fans. It was Grant up against Turner. Turner went down claiming a free kick. It definitely wasn't. Grant burst into the penalty area, fired the ball across the six-yard box, and there was Lyle Taylor for his third league goal of the season to knock it in past Mark Oxley and the Addicts in a scrappy opening 12 minutes in the second half of taking the lead.
Everywhere I look, it's right in front of my face. One foot in the shadows, one foot on the brakes. Can't shake this voice that keeps calling my name every step that I take.
Welcome back. This is Charlton Live, the big match preview on your Thursday evening. Louis Mendes, Tom Wallin and Nathan Muller in the studio here at the Valley. Time to look ahead now. Saturday, we're making the long old trip up to the northwest to take on Blackpool at Bloomfield Road. Hopefully, it won't get called off like it did last time. Although there is a lot of rain in between now and then due to fall around that area. So hopefully the pitch is in slightly better nick than it was when the game got called off an hour before kickoff. Last time you remember that fondly, Tom, because you got to go on a lovely coach trip, didn't you?
When he talks about it today and says hopefully the weather's good, I was like, oh, not again, please not again,
because you're up there again, aren't you? So bring an umbrella. Yep. Just in case. So right, so Blackpool, they're only 3 points behind us in the league table, which is fascinating really, considering the problems that both clubs have. Of course, those of you listening to this show will know very well about what's going on here with Roland du Châtelet. Up there, there's the situation with the Oystons, which has been dragging on and on even longer, I'd say, possibly, than the du Châtelet situation. It sounds very similar. It sounds like they've been told they were going to sell, and then it's still going on, and no one seems to be knowing exactly what the story is. But Max Grafton from the Blackpool Gazette is probably the best person we could have asked. So I got on the phone to him on Tuesday to find out exactly what's going on up at Bloomfield Road, and considering the circumstances, how the Tangerines have been getting on so far this season.
Yeah, well, they're doing very well, really. Like I said, given the circumstances, they're doing much better than anyone could have hoped. It's always a weird one with Blackpool, because you can never, given the off-the-field situation, you can never really fully gauge expectations before a season. I think a lot of people were just, you know, happy for them to stay up. But you never know what's going to happen off the field, so it's very difficult, like I said, to predict at the start of the season. So to lose Guy Bowyer, one game into the new season, which was a shock to everyone. No one saw that coming. Tate McPhillips, obviously, was his assistant. He took over, and then he just carried on the work from Gary Bowen. It doesn't look like anything's changed on the pitch, which is really, you know, real big credit to the players and Tate McPhillips. And to be 3 points off Charlton, you know, a very big club at this level with a very good squad. Blackpool, given what's happening, shouldn't really be competing for the playoffs, but, you know, they are. And as you saw last night, in the FA Cup as well. If they win their replay, they could face Arsenal as well in the third round. So far, it's gone much better than hope this season.
Mm. I mean, what were the circumstances around Gary Bowyer leaving? Was it all to do with the current situation with the owners still?
Yeah, I think that's the major reason. Yeah, he did cite personal reasons, and he did miss a pre-season friendly during the summer for personal reasons. But I think it's just a mixture of everything, really. He sort of said to me, you know, he's like two years of working for Owen Wilson, it's got too much for him. I think, you know, he didn't get the things he wanted. He lost a lot of key players during the summer. Most of them were out of contract because the club failed to offer contracts to the best players. Likes of Clark Robertson, Carvajal have gone to the Championship and players like that. I think most managers at this level accept you don't lose players, but you want to get a fee for them. You don't want to lose your best players for absolutely nothing. So, and there were obviously issues with the training ground. The training ground at Blackpool is unusable. Although I think they are returning there, but they've been away in Preston for the last 3-4 months. So it's just the whole situation a bit of a mess. I think it's got a bit. It just got on top of him, and he sort of rightly thought, how long can I keep putting up with this? Which I don't think anyone can blame him for, to be honest. It was just a shock. It came, like I said, one game into the new season.
So what is the latest with the Oystons? Now they had that court case with Valerie Bellacon, and it seemed like they were going to sell up, and probably similar to Charlton, it seemed like there was going to be a takeover at some point within the near future, but then nothing seems to have materialised.
Yeah, it's ongoing. It's never ending. Whatever other word you want to use, it's very frustrating. And you know, fans, you know, journalists alike, we're all sort of kept in the dark. Owen Wilson doesn't speak to the press, doesn't speak to me personally. He never has done, really. And then Valerie Bellacon on the other side, he's sort of gone quiet the last few months as well. So there's still this sort of £25 million debt hanging over Oyston. He doesn't have that cash lying around. He doesn't have that in his account. That's been pretty much admitted in recent court hearings. But he does have assets. He has, you know, properties and land and that sort of thing. But he's made no effort whatsoever to sell those to raise the cash. So the 12-year anniversary of that initial court judgment passed last month, and we look no closer to a resolution whatsoever. I think Bellacon sort of lost interest in taking over the club. That's never been confirmed. He's never come out and said that, but that appears to be the case. And Oyston just, you know, he's annoyed and frustrated every possible person. He's fell out with his family over this. He's obviously the fans. That's you know, a long running issue. But you know, he's 84 years old, and for some reason, he's desperate to cling on to a football club, which is you know, not making money. It's got no training facilities. Obviously, the fans are boycotting. Why he would want to keep hold of it, I've no idea. But you know, this is the sort of person we're dealing with, and like you sort of suggested before, I guess you've had a sort of similar experience at Charlton as well.
And the fans are still staying away then? There's not been, just because of the success on the pitch, that hasn't brought any back at all?
No, absolutely not. They're staying firm, and you have to respect that, really. I think it was back in League Two a couple of seasons ago when Carl Oyston was still there as chairman, and he sort of hinted that, you know, the fans will come back once they're successful again and they win games, but he was absolutely wrong. They haven't, you know, obviously they won League Two playoffs, they only took 5,000 to Wembley, which obviously compared that to 30,000 the last time they were there. And you know, last season, 12th in League One, your gates were still officially 3,000, but, you know, if you've been to Bluefield Road, you'll know it's not 3,000.
Yeah.
And again, this season, you're flirting with the playoffs, and crowds are, you know, very low, and you know, the bat lines have been drawn now. The people, you know, have taken their position, and they're not going to move from that. Owen Austin doesn't seem like he's going to move from his position, and the fans certainly aren't going to move from theirs. Obviously, that could be tested if there is Blackpool do get, you know, play Arsenal in this FA Cup third round. I'd imagine some will come back, but I'd imagine most of those of casual fans in the town who aren't necessarily Blackpool fans, but those, you know, diehard Blackpool fans that are boycotting, I can't see that changing until Austin goes.
So let's talk about the form on the pitch. As you said, they're only 3 points behind Charlton, so it makes it quite a big game, actually, on Saturday. I mean, what do you think is behind the success that they've had this season, and who are the best players that the Charlton fans should be looking out for?
Yeah, it'd be interesting game to start. I'm looking forward to it. It's interesting to test Blackpool against a side that, you know, I think will probably finish in the playoff place. You know, the play the likes of Peterborough before did well, probably should have beaten Peterborough, did well against Portsmouth, not played Sunderland yet or Barnsley. But Yeah, I think it'll be a good test of where they are at. Recent weeks, obviously lost to Doncaster last week. That was on the back of a five-game winning run. So that's obviously they're happy in good form, but that they made a few changes for the Doncaster game ahead of Slightly Hall Moors FA Cup game, which I think backfired. So they're not, you know, flying as they were last week, so that could affect their conference momentum. But in terms of players to look out for, I mean, Joe Spearing is the obvious one. I'm sure most fans will recognise the name. He's probably Blackpool's best player this season, head and shoulders above most players I've seen in League One. And, you know, he looks far too good for League One, really. But then Curtis Till in defence, he was linked with Ipswich Town during the summer. A lot of Championship clubs are interested with him as well. He's again stepped up from last season when he joined Blackpool from non-league, from Wrexham. But he never looked like a non-league player. Looks like destined for the Championship at least, really. So I think they're the two standout players. But apart from that, Blackpool are just a solid unit, a very hard-working team. There's no real standout flair players attacking-wise. You know, they're not as strong up front maybe as other sides in the top six, such as Charlton, obviously the players like Lyle Taylor. But they're very good defensively. They kept, I think it is, 10 clean sheets in the league, which is the best record in League One. So they are capable of sort of churning out nil-nils, and obviously if games are nil-nil, 78, 80 minutes, they have, you know, the capability of nicking one goal. And obviously that could be the difference in the league.
And finally from me, I'm just wondering how the pitch is looking, because we had quite a nasty experience coming up last year and the game getting called off just an hour before. So is that all looking okay now?
Yeah, it is. I don't want to jinx it, but I don't think you'll have any issues this Saturday, obviously, weather permitting. But the pitch has been really good this season so far. It's normally, I can't remember, what was it, January last season the game was?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It's normally after sort of Christmas time, January, February, that's when it turns, after sort of the winter games. They've only played, I think, one or two home games in the last sort of month or so. So I think the pitch is fine. It's like I said, it's sort of around Christmas and after that time when there's 5-6 games in a short period of time. So you can probably try and play a bit lucky to play before January this time. But yeah, it's absolutely fine.
Okay, Max Grafton there from the Blackpool Gazette promising us that the pitch will be fine. So when we get up there and it's all cooled off, we'll all go around his house and have a word with him. Cheers to Matt for joining us on the phone there. Intriguing contest, actually. And it is funny that considering that both teams have their clear ownership issues, and, I mean, Blackpool get tiny crowds. They probably get, I mean, if you look at their realistic crowd, it's probably not much more than 1,000, depending on how many away fans turn up. But they're doing okay, actually. They got promoted a couple of years ago back into League One. In turn, you know, relatively okay. And they're doing okay in the league this season. Again, they've had a managerial change after one game, which is less than ideal. But they're on our coattails, and that actually makes Saturday a pretty big game as well.
Yeah, huge game. And obviously, we've had the little break from the league, so it'll be nice to get back to that. But yeah, they're in good form as well. I was just having a look. They lost to Doncaster in their last league game right at the end of the month. But apart from that, they won five games, including an FA Cup and a Chequer trade through November. So they're on a good run as well. As you say, just behind us in the league. I mean, in terms of ownerships and the state of the club, we can have our arguments over who's got it worse and all of that sort of thing. But on the pitch, as you say, two sides in very good form. Both got, I think, a game in hand around a lot of the sides around us, and only 3 points below us. So, it's going to be a huge game, and I am looking forward to it and just hoping it goes ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is just bizarre, like, in terms of, like I say, the ownership crisis is at both clubs and the argument about who's got it worse. I mean, we could talk about that forever, but it does go to show, I guess, Nathan, the managers at both clubs, Bowyer here, obviously, and McPhillips up at Blackpool, considering the difficult circumstances they have to work at. I mean, by the sounds of it, Blackpool's Squires Gates training ground isn't even used, so they have to go and train in Preston, so they haven't even got their own training ground. To be in and around the playoff places is quite an impressive feat that both managers have achieved so far.
Yeah, it just shows, I mean, in terms of the players, obviously they're pulling their weight and they're working hard, and, you know, it's to get out of this league, you've got to have a good togetherness. And I think with us, I think we've already touched on it many times, is the sort of the team spirit we have, and I'd imagine because where Blackpool are, they have something similar, because as you say, with the difficulties going off the pitch, if you didn't have strong characters in the dressing room, they'd easily be further down the table. If you look at teams like Bradford, you can only sort of assume that they haven't got the team bond as obviously teams like us and Blackpool do.
Yeah, conceded very few goals actually. Only there's only one team in the league that have conceded fewer than Blackpool, and that's Portsmouth. So they've conceded the same as Sunderland, just 18. So a real test it's going to be for Lyle Taylor and Carlin Grant up top, in particular on Saturday. Although we do know they have got the capability to achieve what they need to do. Right, Lee Bowyer, of course, rested a lot of players last week for the FA Cup game, as we discussed on last Sunday's show. But those players who were rested, are they ready and raring to go now for Saturday's trip up to Bloomfield Road?
Yep, they're all back training now. The only players that we could have played in the Doncaster game, obviously nobody knows all this, so we had Carlin walking from training on Thursday, Christian walking from training on Thursday, Ward didn't even train on Thursday, so we lost them. The only four players that are trained Saturday morning before the Doncaster game was Lyle, Joe Rebo, Pierce and Pat. They're the only four players that could have been selected anyway. So like I said before, a lot of it was taken out of my hands. I couldn't risk any of them four. Pat's just come back into the side. He's played, what, 90 minutes. We've chucked him in the deep end, really. We didn't really want to play him 90 minutes, two on the spin. And obviously Pierce has had a couple of niggles here and there, like he does all the time. He's puts his body on the line. Joe's been playing a lot of games. We're short in midfield at the moment. We ain't got the players to rotate it in the middle of the park. And obviously Lyle, like, do you take a risk with your top scorer? So, my hands were tied, really. There was only four players that could have played anyway. So, but I got a lot of positives out of that Doncaster performance. Young Toby done well at left back. Marshy done well, and he looks like he's improving in the final third. And got valuable minutes into Reeves, Billy Clark, you know, like, because they're people that, especially Billy, we probably need later on in the season.
Are Lyle and Carlin available to you on Saturday?
Yep. So they're training there. Joe Rebo's training. Carlin, Christian's training again. And Tariq. So Tariq was another one. He couldn't train Saturday. He didn't train after the Tuesday game. So he was another one, but he's back training now as well. So they're still a bit tight, but the pitches are heavy. So it's just a bit of juggling at the moment, you know, but it is what it is. And no matter who goes out on Saturday, they'll be ready. And I have no doubt that they'll be competing to win the game.
What about the fitness of Jamie Ward?
Jamie Ward, no. At the moment, he's out. He's not trained since Tuesday, the last Tuesday game. So he's out at the moment.
When do you expect to have him available to you?
Good question. He needs to go for a scan and see how things are, but I can't put a time frame on it yet. But I know he's going to be out for at least the next week or two.
Don't want to tempt fate, but on your part, but is the injury list showing signs of shortening?
Shortening as in getting players back? No. it's not shortening. Get one back, you lose one or two. And I have to, especially with the Saturday, Tuesday games coming up, I have to try and rotate. I have to, because it's tough for them. And a few of them are starting to feel little niggles and stuff now. So it's definitely not shortening that.
And of course, you've got Portsmouth the following Tuesday, so you're going to be doing a lot of travelling, aren't you?
Yeah, Blackpool up and down, obviously a long way. And then the Portsmouth, it's not too far, Portsmouth. So yeah, a lot of travelling, but seems to be a lot of teams up north in this league. There's not many down south, so yeah, but we're used to that. That's what we do when you play. You travel around, and that's just the way it is.
Blackpool's pitch could be better. It's notoriously heavy. Will you have to adapt the way you play to cope with the pitch at Bloomfield Road?
No. I know it'd be heavy because I think Rochdale's game was called off the other night, and obviously that's up that way. We went there last season, game got called off because of waterlogged pitch, so hopefully it stops raining up there. Unlikely, but hopefully. But yeah, it's going to be a heavy pitch, and hey, there's grass on it, and so there's no reason that we have to change. We're still past the ball, and we'll still be creative in the final third because they're the players I have, and we'll defend properly, so no, nothing changes.
There's Lee Bowyer there saying that he won't be allowing a difficult pitch up at Bloomfield Road to become a factor in how Charlton approached the game, but I mean, surely it will make some difference if the ball's sticking. I mean, last time we went up there, I mean, the time after he got called off and we actually played the game, it was one of our worst performances of the season. It can't help, surely, if the ball was not going to whip around on the surface quite like we want it to.
No, it might mean that we probably play it a little bit. But like you say, if the ball's not really rolling nice, we might play... sort of doing the little dinky balls to the flank sort of thing to try and let them press us and then try and go in behind them, which we've done a couple of times last year, people who have done a high press. But yeah, I don't think there's any other way that our sort of players go. I don't think there was times last year when we had Josh and it was literally just route one. I think our players are better than that, and I don't think they'll be tempted to do it. So I don't think we'll be, like you say, free-flowing, but I think we'll try and keep it on the floor, but maybe go a little bit more direct than we're probably used to seeing than when we play at home.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to look to start on the front foot. I imagine the run that we're on, we're the team that should be going there with a degree of confidence, and they will have the majority of them this rest, which, you know, will that come into play? I mean, on paper, it should help us, you'd hope. Mm.
Yeah, you would hope so, but then again, it was that run when all the games got rained off a few seasons ago and we had so many at the end of the season. And actually having that momentum of just playing week in, week out, they kind of battled through it. But I think the way that the games have gone this year, actually with us struggling a little bit on Tuesday nights, I think actually that, you know, having a little bit of a break, particularly because we've got such a small squad, is probably going to be beneficial. It's just about making sure they get up to speed quickly and start the game quickly. And yeah, it should be quite an entertaining game, I think. But as Nave says, we might need to change our style up very slightly. Maybe put Nabs up front or something just to, to change things up and go a bit more direct.
Well, we did show in our last away game, our last league game, of course, was at Burton Albion, where we did have to grind it out. And admittedly, we didn't play well, again, in difficult conditions. It'd been raining for hours and hours before that game. The pitch was very slippery, so maybe too slick rather than more sticky, as I imagine the pitch is going to be, if that's the right word, on Saturday.
We've seen the way Jed Steer can play out from the back as well, those direct balls as well. So we've got other styles in us for sure.
Mm. Now, of course, we heard the team news there. I mean, big news perhaps is the fact that Jamie Ward is going to be missing for a couple of weeks. I mean, he's due to go back to Forest in January. Whether that will get extended or not, we don't know yet. Wardy did say himself about 6 weeks ago they'd be happy to stay if he was given the opportunity. But I mean, now is the time for Tariq Fosu again. He needs to step up and he needs to try and show that form that we saw last year, because we've been saying that all season, really. He hasn't quite hit the heights. I mean, Jacko said he'll have to play his way back into form and he'll need to start doing that on Saturday.
Yeah, he will. I think last year he played a lot out on the in everyone's famous formation 4-2-3-1, so he played quite wider. This season he's predominantly been used as a sort of a central off the striker most of the time. But yeah, he knows he's not been at his best and he needs games. But it'll be interesting to see what Bowes does, especially with Portsmouth on Tuesday, because I think he might have to be quite clever that we don't go too gung ho and use all of our energy, because he ain't going to be able to freshen it up for Tuesday. So
we've got Reevesy, he's been back in with a shout now as well. Do you think he comes back in? Does he come into the bench? He started last week, of course.
I'd put him in.
Yeah, I think he'll have to. I don't think we've got anyone else, unless Bowes going to get his kit off. That sounds weird. Get his kit on, Rob.
Yeah. You're thinking about your fantasies again there, Nathan. Right, so let's hope that Charlton will be able to stretch their winning run. Let's have a look before Nathan gets totally carried away with a naked Lee Bowyer about perhaps some sort of Jacko's jackpot. I mean, this is a different type of Jacko's jackpot we're talking about now, Nathan. Have you got any idea which way you might like to go the weekend? No, right, Tom? While Nathan's trying to struggle to come to terms with what he's imagining.
Oh, pants. Oh, well, I've no idea. Any suggestions?
I can see them being ahead at half time and us winning full time.
Yeah.
Don't want the odds on
that. Yeah. That was the only thing you've been nibbling on over the weekend, of course. I mean, let's have your actual predictions, Tom. I mean, a score prediction for the weekend?
3-1 Charlton.
3-1 to the Addicts. That'd be a lovely, jubbly, Nathan, yourself.
0-0.
0-0. Well, that'd be boring. That. Yeah. But at least we'll be. We'll
at least there'll be a game this time.
Yeah, at least there'll be the excitement of Lee Bowyer taking all his clothes off. Right, this has been Charlton Live, the big match preview. Thank you for listening. It's been a much more explicit episode than normally, with my inadvertent swearing at the start and Nathan,
oh yes, FSF aren't listening to this.
Nathan undressing Lee Bowyer by the end of it, but sometimes it just goes that way. Tom and Nate, thanks for coming in.
Cheers.
I've been Louis Mendes. This has been the big match preview. As I say, don't forget we will be back here on Sunday, but it will be at an earlier time because we're going off to the 20th anniversary of the playoff final. The dinner in the evening, so we'll be at an earlier time, so just keep an eye on our social media feeds to find out exactly what that time is. But on that show we'll be looking back at whatever happens up at Saturday, up at Blackpool on Saturday. Hopefully it will be 3 points for the Charlton boys. We shall see you later.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.